Live from our nation's capital.
This budget thing is going to do nothing. Space Force, I still think it's interesting. President Trump not playing his cards yet. Headlines, policy, and politics colliding.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
I would rather see a congressional solution. It's part of my DNA.
The Senate map in 2020 looks a lot different than it looked in 2018.
You really have a divide within Team Trump.
The president has to do exactly what people sent him here to do, which is to get it done.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Happy Thanksgiving Eve, everybody. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. If you are on your way out traveling, slow down. You will get there. Drive safe. And I've got tons of news to keep you company. There's a new Quinnipiac poll out on the 2020 contenders. Bad news for Senator Elizabeth Warren. Good news for Joe Biden. We will dive into that. More drama from the Secretary of the Navy. And did you see what President Trump said about the centennial coin? It went viral today. I'll give you the latest on that. Plus, U.S.-China trade policy, Hong Kong protests, jam-packed political policy show with some returning favorites and new political all-stars. Maddie Dupler returns, our friend of the program. We're so grateful she's back, senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union and former coalitions director for the House Republican Conference. Also a new mom.
I am.
Of a beautiful baby.
Oh, thank you so much,
Kev. And we're so happy to have you back. And Francis Creighton, his first time on the program. Someone I've known for a while here in Washington, D.C. He's the president and CEO of the Consumer Data Industry Association. He's a longtime Democratic Capitol Hill staffer, including the former chief of staff to Senator Chris Murphy. Francis, welcome.
Thanks so much.
And Maddie Dupler, our resident Republican. You're back from maternity leave.
I sure am.
So can you just give us an update, because you're such a great friend of the program?
Well, I would say that my 3-month-old now cares not at all about my hot takes on tax policy and the Fed. Tried to see if there was a germ of interest there, and there was not.
You shared something on Instagram, I think, where you were.
Yeah,
like,
I was watching one of the press conferences, and you know, they tell you that's good for brain development to talk to them. So I just talked to her about what I'm interested
about. It's a good
about.
Investment.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens when she's older, whether
when she's
recalls
the Fed
any
chair.
Of that. Exactly.
No. Or if you need some good bedtime music, I hear the Fed chair press conferences make pretty
that
good.
Soothing,
can put you to sleep.
Yeah, the cadence of talking about monetary policy, I think, is just what the doctor ordered.
For insomnia.
For insomnia, precisely. Francis, you're here as well. Okay, so we were just talking about this a little bit before we came on air. But did you see this? President Trump has been invited by the House Judiciary Committee to attend an impeachment inquiry hearing. I don't know what he's going to do. He's said.
Oh, Kev, come on.
You think he's going
to? There is no question in my mind that the president is going to show up as the star witness in these proceedings. I mean, the president, you love him, hate him, whatever your opinion of the president is, I think it's pretty unequivocal that he believes he is the best witness for his case in front of the House impeachment proceedings.
Right.
So he's definitely going to show up. Not only that, but he loves to make a good spectacle, right?
Right.
What would be a more highly publicized proceeding than the president himself showing up on the Hill to discuss his own case? I mean, that would be ratings gold, and the president would love that.
Well, from a messaging standpoint, Francis, I mean, he was criticized for live tweeting during the other hearings, and he was, you know, accused of everything from witness intimidation and the like. If he were to show up and be able to do this, it would essentially be like a press conference for the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. It would, but it puts him in the middle of the whole thing. What he should do is look back to what President Clinton did during the 90s impeachment. He should go out. He should sign more bills like he did today. He should go out and do rallies around USMCA, talk about jobs, talk about drug prices, talk about all of these different things, and get away from impeachment. Nobody benefits from any of this. This is just driving us further and further and further
right
down. But he's got some good things to talk about. He should talk about those things.
Right. But he's not going to.
I mean, that's been my advice since day one. It's been thrown out the window.
To your point, Francis, I mean, Mark Penn, according to the Washington Post, the longtime political chameleon who got his start as a senior advisor to former President Bill Clinton, was apparently at the White House, according to the Post, for an hour last week talking about Impeachment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, Francis, what could potentially change a little bit with what you're talking about is what happens over this recess, right? So now we've had what is supposed to be this shift from Democrats holding these proceedings in secret together. Now it's out in public. Now they think they've really brought their case to the American public and they're going to continue to do so. We have a recess in the middle of these proceedings where members have to go home and see if that is the case.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is the test case here. I believe that they're not going to get the kind of feedback that a lot of the really progressive wing thinks that they're getting back home. I think a lot of these guys, particularly the folks who are in seats that are not D plus a million, they're going to go home and they're going to hear exactly the complaint that you just laid out, which is, what the heck else are you doing here?
This USMCA.
Is
not,
yeah, what is getting done? We sent you to Congress to do things. What are those things?
So let's keep, absolutely. We're going to talk about some of the things that they're not doing. USMCA coming up, US-China trade talks, as well as a host of other issues. But let's just to go through the daily impeachment chatter. Last night, as we concluded the show, we got the court ruling from the district judge saying that Don McGahn was going to have to comply with the impeachment subpoenas. Now the Justice Department lawyers have asked a judge to put on hold a ruling requiring that he testify before the panel. Steve Cohen, who is a Democrat from Tennessee, he's on the Judiciary Committee. He spoke to reporters earlier today. Take a listen to what Congressman Cohen had to say.
We could be shocked. And Don McGahn could say, I've been ordered, I'm going to come in. But I think he left it up to the Court of Appeals and to see if they would issue a stay. And if they take the case, they will issue a stay. I'd be shocked if McGahn came in.
So meanwhile, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has been asked about the matter pertaining to Ukraine. He was asked about that earlier today at a press conference at the State Department. Here's the Secretary of State.
We've continued to comply with all the legal requirements. You saw we released documents, I guess it was last week now. We'll continue to do that as required by law and as appropriate.
But all of this comes, again, if you're just joining us, at the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by, of course, the Democrat from New York, Jerry Nadler. He has asked for President Trump to testify on December 4th or his attorney. And the back and forth the other week was that the president welcomed the opportunity to either submit written answers or whatnot. And we're gathering that the Intelligence Committee is also beginning to put together a report to submit to the Judiciary Committee articles of impeachment. According to Chairman Nadler, the president would have until December 1st, which is, if you're playing along at home, folks, this Sunday, mm-hmm. Sunday after Thanksgiving break. So just in a couple of days to reply with whether or not he is going to do so. Just, I don't like to play predictor, but I what do we think? I don't think he's going to do it. I think
you
he'll
think
either
the president's
send,
going to do it?
I think he'll either send his attorney or ask for written questions.
No, I disagree.
Because he could perjure himself.
I think this is why Nancy Pelosi, when she was asked this question, I think it was last week, kind of right. left the door open to both written questions or him testifying, because she also appreciates that the president is someone who takes up all the oxygen in the room. And he certainly believes that he can be the
so
be a better spokesperson
yes,
for himself. I'm a
it.
Hard yes. I
all
think
right,
he'll be there.
You?
I think cooler heads prevail, and that he's worried about the perjury trap, and that ultimately yeah. the lawyers tell him not to do it, and he eventually says, I'm not going to do it. But you're right, though. He loves good TV,
oh, yeah.
and this would be
I mean, yeah,
great TV.
I really do see both sides of this, but I want to move away, but this is just such a fascinating conundrum for the White House to be talking about on this. I mean, because he's labeled it a witch hunt. He said it's a scam. He said he's tried to get folks to not take it seriously. But, mm-hmm. I mean,
Kevin,
talk
you
about
ever
a show.
See, you ever see A Few Good Men?
Yes.
You know, at the
yes.
end? Yeah.
Sorkin.
That's what could
I love
happen
Aaron
there.
Sorkin.
But that's what could happen here, is that Jerry Nadler just pushes him and pushes him and pushes him and says, you're damn right I did.
And I actually think, I mean, truthfully, if you're looking at it from, like, a media perspective, I mean, we reporters are shouting questions at the guy, a lot. This would actually be it's a Republican, a Democrat, a Republican, mm-hmm. a Democrat, and just
there'll be a lot more structure, that's
right.
for sure. But, like, think about the times where we've had, like, really, like, when the president has actually gone to the podium and sat in the press room with you guys, and
yeah.
the thing goes on for an hour and a half,
right.
and he asks you, do you want me to be done with this? And everyone says, no, we love
yeah.
it. He just has this magnetism about him, and some people think he uses that for good, some people think he uses that for bad. But I think that the president, given the opportunity, wants to take the lumps against Jerry Nadler and thinks he could beat him.
And let's not forget that he and Jerry Nadler have a long history.
Long history.
Yeah, yeah. Many different projects.
Oh, no, you guys, I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. I kind of hope he does go. It'd be, great, it'd be a great thing to cover.
Would that not just be like the stamp on 2019 if that happens at the end of the year?
Let's go out with a bang, folks. Eat your turkey this Thursday so we can all rest up for that. All right, coming up, we're going to pivot to policy. I spent way much longer on that than I thought, way much more time than I thought I was going to, but that's a juicy topic, folks.
You mean tonight or in 2019?
Oh, tonight and on 2019. coming up, panel stays, Francis Creighton. I feel like you've been on before. So great to have you in the studio. And Maddie Doppler is back. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find us on Radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. We're just a few days from Gobble Gobble Day, and you are listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I'm still basking in the glow of the aura of Marianne Williamson, who joined us on our program yesterday. And, you know, I feel like that vibe is what I'm going to carry with me into this week, regardless of whether or not you agree with her politics. And I'm not, having an assessment on that. I'm just a journalist. But, you know, it was a vibe. Francis Creighton's here. He is the president and CEO of the Consumer Data Industry Association, longtime Dem Hill staffer, and served as the chief of staff to Senator Chris Murphy. How's Senator Murphy doing?
He's great.
Yeah?
He's great. He's loving his job.
Yeah.
He's in the middle of all of this, and
he is.
It's interesting and it's exciting for him.
And I'm curious what his long-term ambitions are or long-term career path is. I mean, he could really be a player on a host of different tracks. I could see him doing many things, as could you. You're nodding.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
And Maddie Doppler is back, senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union, former coalitions director to the House Republican Conference. All right, Marianne Williamson, I asked her in the break yesterday, I said, what's your favorite poem? And this is what I was teasing for both of you guys. What do you think Marianne Williamson's favorite poem is?
Where the Sidewalk Ends.
Trees by Joyce Kilmer.
Oh, that's a good one. No, it's The Second Coming by Yeats.
Oh, okay.
And that famous line, things fall apart, the center cannot hold.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Very good.
Deep, mm-hmm. deep. The reason I asked you that question is because I had lunch with, or actually dessert, with my high school English teacher over the weekend back home. And I asked him for a poem to read because he's the man. And I haven't seen him in at least 12 years. I haven't seen him in a very long, 10 years, at least a decade. And he told me to read Digging by Seamus Heaney. And Mr. Roper, if you are listening, I have read it multiple times over the past 24 hours. So let's talk policy. Let's talk policy, my friends. Did you see this? Because President Trump was asked about the Hong Kong bill, from poems to policy, with Kevin
Cirilli. Dying about this transition.
How's that for a pivot, Christine Barada, our EP? He was asked about the Hong Kong bill. Take a listen to Trump on the Hong Kong bill. Here he is.
We're with them. I have a very good relationship, as you know, with President Xi. We're in the final throes of a very important deal. I guess you could say one of the most important deals in trade ever. It's going very well, but at the same time, we want to see it go well in Hong Kong, and I think it will. I think that President Xi can make that happen.
So it's interesting because he still hasn't. Is he going to sign it?
We don't know.
So
it's so interesting to me, right? Because I'm a tax and trade and financial person.
Right.
Everything I see everything through the lens of like trade and what's happening in U.S. China right now, and I don't quite appreciate this hemming and hawing on the Hong Kong issue. Not only because on its own virtue is it important, but we're nearing this December 15th deadline for the new tranche of tariffs to go into effect, and the United States needs to be able to show that something is happening on the U.S. China trade front, right? So to sign the Hong Kong bill now, to argue that you can't sign the Hong Kong bill because that might upset the delicate balance of the negotiations between U.S.-China trade would suggest that those negotiations are still quite delicate. And I think that is not the message that the administration wants to send either. So I think the administration might be looking at this and thinking, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I think it would send a very strong signal that they are secure in their negotiating position on U.S.-China trade, and they can continue to have those conversations outside of what happens with the bill.
I would like to see the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, say very clearly and specifically what America's values are, what we expect the Chinese to do, how if the Chinese want to continue to be part of the global community, that they are going to treat the protesters in Hong Kong right. Saying, oh, I just think that everything's going to work out fine is troubling to me. He needs to state, what do we stand for as Americans?
And in some sense, this is a prime opportunity for the president to do that, because we've had so much muddling about with it, with the NBA really stepping in and a bunch of, you know, the pop culture conversation on this has been very disappointing. The president could really swoop
LeBron,
in and say,
if you're listening, LeBron.
Exactly. All this virtue signaling from these celebrities and just really, really, I think, taking us several steps backward from where we have been previously as the leader of the free world. I think the president could step in and say, as he is wont to do on many other issues, say, I'm going to lead here. I'm going to make our mark. I'm going to make sure that America is first on these values.
Maddie, it really is interesting. And obviously, Congress could override the veto in a blink.
Yeah.
And I thought that Senator Marco Rubio, the Republican from Florida, who's been driving this in the Senate, I think he has really emerged as a leader on this particular issue. Beyond that, just to catch everybody up to speed as where things stand for the phase one deal, there was a call today. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, Le He, his Chinese counterpart in Beijing.
The Chinese is getting good.
And thank you. And I've mispronounced his name so many times, and so many people have told me, both listeners, viewers, and some of my awesome colleagues have all told me that. But I think I just said it right there. And U.S. Trade Rep Bob Lighthizer, they were having a call. So they're still inching closer, I guess, to that December 15th deadline when billions of dollars worth of tariffs could go up. And then on the USMCA front, I mean, every time I interview a Republican staffer, lawmaker, administration official, they're like, when is USMCA going to get done? And, you know, Francis, take us behind the scenes. What are you hearing from your Democratic friends about USMCA?
The big thing is the calendar. Yeah. You got to get this thing scheduled. We've only got a couple more weeks before the end of the year. And there just seems to be not the momentum to actually get it onto the calendar and to get it scheduled and to call the question. Hey, are we going to do it or not? And then you make members make the decision one way or the other.
And here's what I think could start to change that calculus, which, again, a lot is riding on this work period with members back in their districts. But I think that's what one of the things Nancy Pelosi is waiting on. If her members come back and they say impeachment isn't resonating, and that seems to be the case, mm-hmm. all the polling indicates that these hearings have done nothing to change public perception on impeachment. If their members come back and say, we need to have a win going into this new year when we need to start campaigning, I think that could really flip the switch for Pelosi and wanting to get USMCA done. And then we know, with Nancy Pelosi in control, if she says we're doing this, members will line up to vote for it.
Also, President Trump pardoned not one, but two turkeys today.
This is the most important story of the day.
Yeah.
And I will say, I looked online at the profiles of the turkey. I'm a girl from Wisconsin. I always vote dairy. I wanted butter to get the pardoning, and he did. Go Pack Go.
Yeah, we are having the worst season this year.
The interesting thing about this turkey thing.
And you're a Patriots fan.
Oh, no, God, no.
No, what are you?
If anything, I'm a Giants fan, okay. But I'm not a big football fan. But the president actually did something that presidents do without any drama today, which is kind of a big deal.
Well, did you hear what he said, though?
What?
He took a major swipe at Democrats.
I think we have the soundbite.
Yeah, he went off script a little bit and analogized the turkey pardoning to his own interactions with the Democrats.
We might.
So my point is even the littlest thing that a president can do that's just a normal, regular course of business, you get a nice little media opportunity out of it, even then he can't control himself from throwing out a little dig.
Well, here's a soundbite from the turkey pardon about the stock market. Here he is.
But bread and butter, I should note that unlike previous witnesses, you and I have actually met. It's very unusual.
This is the most bizarre tradition in Washington.
I love
this.
Can we agree on this?
Here's the fact that we put the turkeys
so
up at the Willard.
I am getting so over time, but I will tell you the first time that Bloomberg Television ever allowed me to guest anchor on television, it was a turkey pardon day 2 years ago. And I felt like I was both a sportscaster, a Bloomberg Television correspondent. I was trying to mix the markets, but I was doing like a play-by-play of like the president of the United States pardoning turkeys. Coming up, much more policy, poultry, and politics with our favorite all-star panel. My favorite poem, for what it's worth, is called The Mountain by Robert Frost. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Hungry Heart by the legendary Bruce Springsteen, one of my all-time favorites. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. Maddie Doepler's here, Francis Creighton's here. Maddie, what's your favorite poem?
You asked me this in the break, and I still haven't come up with one. I'm not much of a poetry reader.
Right, well, you have about 24 minutes.
It was just suggested to me that I should read this to the baby, so I'm going to start. So what should I start with?
Yeats.
Yeah, Yeats? Start with Yeats?
But I my favorite childhood author was always Roald Dahl.
Oh, Roald Dahl's great. Roald Dahl's great. I read a lot of Shel Silverstein as a kid.
Oh, yeah. What's your favorite poem?
Lake Isle of Innisfree by Yeats.
Okay, put that on the email chain.
Okay.
Because I want to read that.
It's one of the greats.
There's a 2020 poll out today, Quinnipiac. Good news for Biden, bad news for Warren. And then we got to talk about Buttigieg. He went viral today. I don't know if you've been following this about the African-American vote. There was this column on TheRoot.com. Right. And it's been, you know, Kamala Harris was on MSNBC criticizing him for comparing the LGBTQ advancement of civil rights with the African-American civil rights. So let's start with the poll. Joe Biden, I'm reading from the Bloomberg Terminal, Ryan Teague Beckwith. Joe Biden had established a strong lead in the Democratic primary fight as Elizabeth Warren's standing has dropped. A national poll released Tuesday showed the former vice president has retaken the top spot in the Quinnipiac University national poll. 24%. 24% for Biden. That's up from 21% in the October poll. But 24% for Biden. And Warren is now at 14%. She's down 14 percentage points from that same survey at the end of last month. And she's tied with Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg. We always talk about Warren, Buttigieg, and Biden. Bernie Sanders, and I repeat, Bernie Sanders has been the most consistent performer this entire race.
I think that's true, but I think...
And Biden. Sorry, I mean, I'll throw Biden in there
too. That's what I was going to say, is that Sanders has been consistent, but not in a way that is that shows strength in the campaign. It shows constancy, which doesn't win you a presidential campaign. Mm. It shows you that he has a bulk of support that probably isn't going to move off of him. It shows you that he has some staying power, but he is also one of the ones that gets the headlines and gets has the most to suffer from when you get a new entrant to the race. So that's when Biden came in, you saw Sanders suffer as a result of that. When Elizabeth Warren started to really become ascendant, the question was how that takes away from Sanders. And so I don't see him as competing alongside the other folks who are consistently polling,
but
at least around him.
The argument from Bernie world is, okay, if Warren starts to go down, Francis, and you know this, tell me about your Democratic friends. If Warren starts to go down, you're going to hear from Bernie, and you heard it on the Medicare for All debate. I'm paraphrasing. I'm the OG progressive. If you want a progressive, go to me, Warren voters.
Warren voters are going to go to Bernie, and Bernie voters are going to go to Warren, right? And I think what I'm interested in this poll is the stability at the top of the list, that you have
right.
four candidates who are just continually getting double digits. Nobody else is getting double digits. So if they're staying like this now and nobody else is able to break in, but no one else is able to get to 50, you know, when everyone else is at 20 or something, could you end up in a place where you go through all the primaries and you have four candidates proportionally breaking up the delegates and walking in with a truly open convention?
All right. Tucker Carlson's been also getting into the 2020 debate. He's saying that former President Obama hasn't backed Joe Biden because Michelle Obama could run. Do we think Michelle – should we be taking this seriously? Could Michelle Obama get in the race?
I don't think so. I think that – and the problem is that Michelle Obama politically suffers from the same issues that Biden is suffering from right now. Having to answer for the last 8 years that brought us to the point where we have Trump, I think, is one of the political liabilities there. But secondly, you know, Biden has proven that he can't be progressive enough for the left flank of the party, but he also can't be moderate enough to bring people into the fold. Michelle Obama might be a little bit more, I think,
it's smart.
Equipped.
Whoever's advising her is smart, though, because people there's a giant question mark about what her political future could be. And question mark means various opportunities.
Well, the very last person I'm turning to for advice on what's going to happen in the Democratic primary is Tucker Carlson. Right. I mean, where did he get that from?
But the question of her political future is an open-ended one. She could really...
Sure, she could run for something, and Chelsea Clinton could run for something, or, you know, whatever. But has she done anything to suggest that she's going to run? No, it's just people right now are at the point in the campaign where they want something new.
Yeah.
During 2004, it led to the Wesley Clark campaign, and then we had Fred Thompson jumping in at the last minute.
But I think that this thesis has actually been tested with the fact that a Clinton didn't win, a Bush dropped out of the primaries last time around. I mean, both sides are sick of this legacy talk. They want to see something new because they think that the people who've been in power on both sides of the aisle have screwed it up so much that we need new people, we need new ideas in Washington.
So, Pete Buttigieg is 38 years old or whatever he is, and Elizabeth Warren 10 years ago or 15 years ago was a college professor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, we are getting fresh faces.
How would you size up, Francis, the way that Buttigieg has his political playbook in the last week since the last debate?
Well, he's trying to take advantage of this momentum that he's had, but yet he's run into the big problem that Democratic candidates have, which is if you don't have support among the African-American community, you can't survive in a Democratic primary. African-American voters...
He literally has 0% of the vote.
In South Carolina, right? And then it speaks to the weakness about our nominating process that we have Iowa and New Hampshire, two very, very white states going first. But then we go into South Carolina, and then we go into Nevada, which are more diverse.
We could do a whole show on ways that would make it more fair or less fair. And that's right.
And I have a
crazy idea. Maybe have a raffle and have like different days of different Super Tuesdays. And then like you raffle off the states.
Well, and Super Tuesday this year is, I think, one of the biggest Super Tuesdays that we've had in several cycles. So
buckle
it's going to be. Yeah.
There was a proposal back in the day where Super Tuesday would move regionally from election to election.
Yeah, I think that'd be, you know, what do I know? I'm not an expert. Coming up, what's on the panel's radar? Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find us on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. If you're driving anywhere for Thanksgiving, make sure you slow down, don't get in a car crash, and be safe. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I love that song, Matt Kearney. Matt Kearney is just the best. One of my all-time favorites. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. Francis Creighton, this is your first time on the show.
Yeah, it is.
How's it going?
You tell me.
And Maddie Duffler's here as well, a long-time favorite of the show. Francis, you're the president and CEO of the Consumer Data Industry Association.
Mm-hmm.
What's on your agenda for the next couple of months?
Well, we work with The Hill on all sorts of issues. Anything moving in the banking space, anything to change regulation in the banking space, we're interested in. And we work with our partners up there in the Banking Committee and the Financial Services Committee. But the big thing right now, privacy in California. That privacy bill is so far-reaching, and it's kind of like an American version of GDPR.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But instead of taking 10 years to be done, it was basically done in 2 weeks in Sacramento.
And so what would the negative impacts of it be?
Well, it's going into effect on January 1st. Yeah. Attorney General Becerra needs to put out some regulations, but it's got some really deep impacts for your listeners, particularly Bloomberg listeners. And I don't think people have really understood this is a long topic, and people really do.
We'll come back on and share.
Yeah,
with
yeah,
us.
We can talk
who
about that.
Who are good people up on Capitol Hill that are really in this space, lawmaker wise?
Roger Wicker is terrific on privacy. Maria Cantwell is really terrific on it. And then there's a congresswoman from Washington State named Suzanne DelBene.
I've heard of her.
Yeah, she used to work for Microsoft, and she's probably, I think, the most thoughtful person I've heard talk about this. She really gets it on all sides. She wants to make sure that information is available and out there, but also that Americans' privacy.
I'm totally putting you on the spot right now, but last week in the spin room when I bumped into Andrew Yang, he has this idea to create an international type of trade, not trade, but like the World Trade Organization for data.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good idea, bad idea? The Obama administration kind of floated something similar of a anti-hacking almost truce between Russia, U.S., China, and the major world
powers. Yeah, that's a bigger issue. And, you know, cyber warfare is something that's being practiced right now against the United States, and everything from the Sony hack and on down. And we have no international norms about what should happen there. And, you know, I've asked people before, do we need a sort of Vienna Convention on cyber things, right? And it's scary when you think about how the Russians and others have used cyber operations in the Baltics, in Ukraine, and in other places.
So you guys do the artificial intelligence world?
Not really us. Really. We're very specific on consumer data, the things that are covered by what's called the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
Got it. Okay. So now it's time for my favorite part of the show, which is what's on the what's the panel's favorite poem? Just kidding. What is on the panel's radar? Maddie, what is on your radar?
Well, again, it is everyone's favorite time of the year, and that's not the holidays. That is the end of the year legislating, and we see exactly what Congress thinks they can try to sneak into the end of the year funding bill. We know that there's probably an agreement on funding levels, so that now means there's going to be negotiations.
December 20th, right?
That now means there's going to be negotiations on policy riders that will potentially make their way in there. I'm watching things that would be bad surprises for taxpayers in the new year, potentially something like surprise billing, which is when a patient gets a surprise bill for care they receive out of network. There's a lot of bad ideas on the Hill about how to handle that. That would essentially eliminate all of the tensions that work right now to keep some of these actors in check. So keeping an eye on that. There also potentially would be a bailout of the public pension fund. So our work is not done here yet. It might be Thanksgiving, but we need a couple days to recharge, and then we're back at it when they come back next week.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
And getting all of that done, by the way, gets in the way of USMCA and other things.
Exactly. So the more Congress tries to load up this end of the year deal with poison pills that could not survive scrutiny without some kind of legislative train for them to hang off of, the less opportunity there is to do things that I think both sides do want to get done, USMCA being that main priority.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's on your radar, Francis?
I've been reading this fascinating story about the outcomes of this U.S. Navy guy who was accused of war crimes. He was acquitted by a jury, but his command structure wanted to remove his SEAL Trident pin, and the Secretary of the Navy has resigned over it. And there's a really incredible back and forth between him, the Secretary of Defense, the President, about who actually should be able to determine how a member of the military is disciplined according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Yeah.
And, you know, as with everything in the Trump administration, it's fascinating to see. Did he resign or was he fired? Mm-hmm. The resignation letter, what does it look like? When did it come? And it sort of falls in that same space as Jeff Sessions' resignation letter or Rod Rosenstein's resignation letters. It's just been fascinating to watch, and I think there's major implications, and I'm not a veteran and I've never served, but I think it has major implications for how our military is policed by its own as sort of the leaders of the free world.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. You know what's on my radar?
What, Kev?
Well, a lot of things, but I mean, I do want to mention that the president, this whole centennial coin issue.
Yeah.
The centennial Commemorative Coin Act, and this directs the Treasury Department to mint a coin celebrating the 19th Amendment, which of course passed with unanimous consent, and it honors the women's suffrage movement, the 100-year anniversary of it.
What took so long to have the centennial coin?
Yeah, 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and the president always says, you know, no matter what it is, it took, you know, for some reason it's never got done before, and it took me to come along to get it done. I don't know why we didn't celebrate the 100th anniversary many years ago, but now that I'm here, we got it done.
This is an Abbott and Costello skit, I think. I think this is like, we're all
me
being
not
punked.
Being able to get the right soundbite, or?
No, but I mean, if it's the kind of thing that if you were watching SNL and they were doing a cold open, you could expect this.
Sometimes
very
I feel like my life is an SNL skit. Cirilli's SNL skit.
Well, Melania, that's because Trump, you other live things, with joy.
Melania Trump got booed today at an opioid event. Don't I
like
that,
a school, right?
Yeah,
at
school.
A school.
Let's
all rise above. Let's all vibe at a higher frequency together.
And LL Cool J is going to host the 42nd annual Kennedy Center Honors. These were all of the things that could have been on my radar. And the Christmas tree is finally at the White House.
Hey, you know, where's it from?
I have 20 seconds. Can I find out in 20 seconds?
I don't know.
LL Cool J, though, is from Queens, New York.
Oh.
Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening. Kevin Cirilli, you're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.